Board of Supervisors meeting will come back to order. And next agenda item, we'll go back to item nine, Planning Department discussion of possible action relative to authorization to submit a grant application for energy planning program assistance. Ms. Grijalva.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. The request before you today is to seek authorization to apply for a grant for PG&E funds. It's similar. It's the same program, only the different phase, I guess you could say, of the program where we did the countywide inventory, greenhouse gas inventory report. This is the next stage or phase of that process where we would be able to get funding up to 75% of the funds needed to prepare the strategic energy plan or to get assistance to develop that strategic energy plan for the county, which we will be using then in our general plan implementation programs. We would have to provide a match of in-kind funds in staff time. There is public outreach that's required as part of this. The Sierra Business Council will assist with that, but we would have to participate in that. As I said a little bit ago, this is something that we will need to do for our general plan implementation programs to develop things that we are going to set up to help mitigate the energy consumption and the greenhouse gas section of the county's general plan that will come out in the EIR. The EIR discussion on greenhouse gases will have to propose mitigation measures for the county to do things that will help offset or mitigate some of the greenhouse gas emissions.
I can help with that.
Pardon?
I can help with that. Get rid of about 25% of the mandates coming to Sacramento and reduce them greatly. But that's not going to happen.
AECOM provided me with a sample from the Dixon plan that they worked on, and they to show some of the things that that will work for that. So they're not really large fund or costly items. Things for in the Dixon plan, for example, would be like develop a technical assistance program to serve as a resource on green construction practices for local builders, provide outreach to local developers, architects, and builders on PG&E savings by design programs, things like tree planting in parking lots and along streets, changing out the lights in traffic signals, which we don't at this time don't have any. I think they're all, most of them, if not all of them, are Caltrans. But to identify and advertise available rebates for smart grid compatible appliances and systems on the county's website. Things along those lines, they don't have to be, it's not like developing a mass transit system, something to that degree. There are some very minor things that can be done that would go towards providing the mitigation measures. And it's informing people, about STAR programs and funding mechanisms or programs that PG&E may offer for replacing appliances with more energy efficient appliances and things of that nature.
Susan, does the strategic energy plan that these funds are supposed to help prepare have to try to demonstrate X percentage level of reduction below what the previously done greenhouse gas emission inventory showed on a local? Because I don't know if you recall the presentation of the greenhouse gas mm-hmm. inventory, but it was a farce. I'll say again for the record, it's a farce.
What'd you say, John?
They said that there was like 34 or 58 wood stoves in the county of Amador. I mean, it was so far from reality, it wasn't funny.
There's no horses, I think, wasn't that
the thing? Yeah, they measured enteric fermentation. I now know what that word means. And it's just out of cows, but no horses, no goats, no sheep. None of the other livestock that's in the area had any enteric fermentation, only cows. So, I mean, the inventory itself was so flawed that if this new strategic energy plan has to address some reduction below the inventory level that that plan said we have, might be kind of hard to do because that plan so under captured what the real inventory of greenhouse gas emissions really is.
Yeah, I can't answer that question specifically. This would be going towards meeting the goals of SB 30 or AB 32 and SB 375. So those are, there are targets that are out there. So I don't know that it would specifically be under the inventory, but it would be setting targets or going towards the targets that have been set for us, I should say.
The most compelling argument from who was on the phone with us, Drew Sackman?
Jeff Goldman
was, it's something we have to do anyway. If we can recover 75% of the money and if it's business friendly, if it's not something way out there, but it's something we're going to have to do anyway, we might as well use the funds, apply for the grant, and use it for a beneficial purpose to help businesses deal with AB 32 and SB 375.
And again, these are funds, these are PG&E funds that have been paid for by their ratepayers. As we talked about this at the last go-round on, for the inventory. So the people of Amador County and the whole Sierra, you know, region that SBC this has been serving for this program, they've been paying and PG&E for the, you know, in their bills, in their energy bills. So this money would be coming back to the community in a way for us to utilize it rather than spending additional tax dollars to do essentially the same thing.
Well, question, who's going to be doing this study?
This is
energy plan.
This isn't a study. This is an energy plan. This is for where, well, it will be something that will be done with our participation.
By whom?
Yes.
This.
Is it ICLEI again?
Well, it wasn't. ICLEI was the format or the model that was used. ICLEI didn't do it.
Our
business council will work with the participating governments to provide professional training and capacity building within their staffs.
Well, I guess.
It would be something that we would be participating in as to those strategies that we want to put into the plan. So, I mean, my understanding is it would be the county's prerogative that what we put in here, whether we're going to put in educational materials, whether we're going to reduce rates for solar permits. These are all kinds of things that go into this kind of plan that we, what the county is going to do to help not only, or to help reduce energy consumption, not only as a county and the way we operate, but also helping the public and businesses.
So you're not sure who we're going to be working with to do this then?
We would be working with Sierra Business Council.
I know that part, but.
Right. But as far beyond that, no, I don't.
Another question. Are we even mandated to comply with SB 375, being as we have a real small population? I thought there's some type of exemption for that.
We're not under 375.
Correct. Yes.
Well, then why are we addressing SB 375?
Well, it's AB 32 also.
We are under.
We are subject to AB 32.
Yeah.
This goes more towards the environmental analysis, the environmental review for not only our general plan, but other projects that come forward after the general plan is updated. This goes more towards CEQA than it goes.
Essentially, we got a gun to our head and we have to do this. You know, the bottom line is I have a friend who lives in Calaveras County. He's a well-adjusted Vietnam veteran. PG&E here a while back went to his house and they decided, well, you don't have a water heater, so we're going to give you a new water heater. Looked at his refrigerator, even though it's not running very well. It's messed up, but it was a 1990-something model, so that's not, that's too new. We can't give you a new refrigerator, but he got a new water heater. And, you know, bottom line is we all pay for this in the end.
And what we have today, there's a very short turnaround time in, to get the application in. We have to get it in by the end of the month, and that's why this is on the today's agenda. So what I'm really looking for today is authorization to apply for the grant funding. If something comes up and we don't want to take it, or we decide not to take it later, if we are awarded it, we can do that.
But none of us like AB 32 or SB 375, but they were passed in the law. We have to deal with it. It seems like a way we can save 75% of the money to put this program together, as long as our staff takes the lead on it. And that means not our consultant, but you have to have your head in it and your interpretation of the way it should be done, and not the business council's way that it should be done. And that's where you're basically going to be our protection, the board's protection, and the county's protection in putting this together the way we envisioned it, to protect our businesses and not put a bunch of other language in that we don't want inserted into the document.
This is a necessary component to keep us underway to get our general plan done.
Yes. Yeah. To get the EIR for the general plan done. And also as implementation programs that would be in the actual general plan itself. So, yes.
And if you find out the interpretation is different, that Sierra Business Council wants to play more of a role in it, then maybe we want to reconsider.
And I can report back to you if I find something like that out. If I get into the application process or even in the awarding process, if I find that there are, you know, sticks that go with the carrot, I will let you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't mind getting hit in the head with a stick once.
Susan, do we know how much money we're talking about? I mean, if everything goes right.
We don't know exactly, but in the information that was disseminated, it says up to $65,000. Let's see here.
Hey, any other questions?
Nope.
Any public comment?
Yeah, up to $65,000.
Thank you, Susan.
Up to $65,000. Can I have a motion then?
Susan, one more question. When did you learn of this grant availability? Or when did this grant cycle open?
The issue date was the 24th, and I heard about it.
Of April?
Yes. And I was busy getting Jackson Valley Quarry together. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. And then I got a phone call, I believe, on like the 2nd or 3rd, because
I'm not directing that question at you. It just appears to be an ongoing tactic.
It's a very short term.
They suddenly release the availability of these monies. They put an end date that's real close, and everybody is supposed to scramble to make sure they don't miss this wonderful opportunity.
No, I know, and I realize
don't like
that.
The tactic. It's all the time. Though.
Yeah. And maybe in their world, 30 days is a long time, but in ours, it's not.
And I await a motion.
I'll make a motion that we apply for this grant.
You want to authorize staff to submit an application for these PG&E funds and authorize chairman to sign the application. I'd like to add on there, if our planning director does not run into any unforeseen language.
It's fine.
Or catches.
And just for the motion also, in looking at the material that I got, they are asking for a letter or resolution. So I believe we sent a letter from the board chairman to sign, letting them know that you're supporting the application.
Okay.
So
with a caveat, the chairman's signature on a letter letting them know that
we're applying.
Can you sign?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Got something wrong with your nose?
Moved and seconded to authorize the authorized staff submit for this, as long as that Susan does not find any unforeseen language and chairman's signature on the application. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Begrudgingly.
As for no's, I can vote against my motion. No, I'll say aye.
Motion carries 5-0. All right, on to, thank you, Susan. On to, back to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the proposed listing of three amphibians, two of which would affect Amador County. So, Mr. Hoffman, do you have anything to say on this, John, or is this kind of hitting you between the eyes? Is something new?
No, this is fine. I have taken the time to look at the listing decision or listing proposal and the critical habitat proposal, and I do have a couple of comments on that. First off, the Endangered Species Act operates under maybe a couple of methods that's key to the operation. One is the listing is to be considered only by scientific information. Okay, there's no room for economics or social or any other kind of impacts. It's simply a scientific decision that says, is this species in trouble or is it not? Okay. So the Endangered Species Act requires, and it's seldom been done, so I am pleased to see that they do it this time, that once you've made that decision, concurrent with announcing that decision, you list critical habitat. And critical habitat is determined after consideration of economic and social and other factors. So it's kind of the thing was, okay, yeah, the species is in trouble, and critical habitat says, how much do we care? And you very easily, it's permissible to say, we don't care at all. In which case, there would be no repercussions that for listing the species. Of course, it never works quite that way, but that's the implementation part. But that's how it works. And so it's very appropriate to have a listing and a critical habitat done at the same time. And it's then very important that we comment on it. In this particular case, looking at those two factors individually, the listing decision, you can have, and I would encourage you to request a public hearing. Because that tells them they are listing this species under basically two conditions. One is that the trout is causing the problem. And we have planted those trout up country in all these lakes that were, before settlement times, were all fishless. And so the frog did very fine. Well, now we've planted those for the last 80 years. And now the trout, now the fish, the frogs aren't doing very well. Okay, so that's one purpose for the decline of it. The second is disease. Not a lot you're going to do about the disease. They don't really know, and there's even some debate as to how extensive that disease is causing the problem. But based on those two factors, they're proposing to list the species. Well, I think it's very important that we comment on those two factors. Because the fish, the planting is done under the state fish and game, or state fish and wildlife now. Right? And the state fish and wildlife is going through a process to determine what areas they will plant and what areas they won't. They have already agreed that they will not plant on any place in any stream or lake or pond that has yellow-legged frogs. And they will also not plant any place within a certain distance of those ponds where it's likely that they, yellow-legged frogs would travel. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then they've already solved part of the problem, perhaps. But that's they're conducting their EIS right now. The final isn't out. The final is determined on whether they do a basin management plan, and that basin management plan is what they're now currently doing. So it'll make that final determinations of which they will plant and which they won't. Well, if they determine not to plant any of those areas that have yellow-legged frogs, then what need is there for a listing? But they certainly ought to delay the listing until you get those answers. And you can't determine critical habitat until you determine what are already being protected and whatnot, are those added? Fish and Wildlife Service may say, we want to protect this one, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, because they are looking at the economics, they're saying, well, this area has a whole bunch of anglers using it all the time, and this one doesn't. We're going to not plant this one over here and protect this for yellow-legged frogs, and this one is going to be protected for anglers. But without that information of the Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, they're going to make the decision. They make the wrong one. So,
Mr. Hoffman, so we could request to have a public hearing be held?
Yes.
Now, would that be like in Sacramento, most likely, or if you request one to be held even here?
The location is determined by the Fish and Wildlife Service, but we should push to have it here. And they certainly can. They've done field hearings
before.
Or
maybe talk to Eldorado County, because it looks like they're having I'd like to have it here, but Alpine is looking like they're having.
Alpine is hit pretty hard.
200,000 acres basically being affected. I mean, that's a lot. That's what.
This is a new listing. So under the map that listing this on the Defend Rural
yes.
America.
Okay,
under that map, it shows the Sierra Nevada mountain yellow-legged frog and the Yosemite toad as those areas, estimated historical ranges, being in Amador County, and yet it doesn't show under the fact sheet Amador having any proposed critical habitat by category. Why?
They're wrong. The Federal Register shows the Squaw Ridge area as being listed. And the map's not clear enough for me to see whether does that come all the way down to Bear River and up to Cables Lake, but it certainly goes up to Cables Lake. So where it begins, but somewhere between Bear River and Silver Lake.
Right. But we should be on that list as acres because it does on the first page, it says affected counties, and Amador is one of them.
That's right. Only for the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog. Yosemite toad, we actually spill in just a little bit from the Blue Lakes, but it's just the very top margin, and just, so we weren't even listed for some reason as affected for the Yosemite toad. But we are in there for...
John, when you started out, you said something that in the beginning in all these lakes there was no trout.
That's right.
Do we know that for a concrete fact? I find that hard to believe.
Well, yes, the high elevation. High elevation.
Super high, maybe. But
well, over
3,000
feet. Over 3,000 feet, I believe, is their statement. I'd have to go back and check.
I thought it was 4,900.
Yeah, maybe it is. Yes.
That rainbow. They said rainbow was naturally occurring up to 4,900 feet. I remember this in Central Sierra Planning when Larry Busby was trying to work with Alpine County on that.
When they first started out, it was cutthroat trout they wanted to eliminate.
Yes, and La Junta cutthroat
trout is one of those. Yeah.
That's one of those that are introduced.
They're trying to reestablish those in Nevada.
That's right. And see, that's where the economics comes in. Somebody's got to be able to say, we'd rather have trout than yellow-legged frogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a choice that the public needs to weigh in on. And maybe we wouldn't. It's a choice. That's why the public hearing is so important. I can say, yes, that's true, because the Fish and Wildlife Service put it in their statements here, in their listing for decision. They're quoting, I think, Peter Moyle, that wrote in the Sierra Nevada ecosystem plan.
That's all right.
Nevada SNAP.
I get the drift.
Sierra Nevada ecosystem plan, yeah.
You know...
I just want to say you're correct, John, because every county on every public hearing, they might have something different that they want in there. And I'm counting on my map here, I'm counting around 14, 15 different counties, so they could all be different.
That's right.
What we want here, El Dorado might not want.
That's right. That's right. You'll want to look at, now they have also, when they establish critical habitat, they kind of throw the world out there, and they expect to then have it narrowed down through this process. And if you don't engage in this process, there's no justification for them to narrow it down. The yellow-legged frogs only move, well, they're typically found within 3 feet of a stream. A stream or a wetlands.
So why are they found on Squaw Ridge?
Squaw Ridge.
Yeah. It's drier than this tabletop.
Yeah. And so that's the critical habitat, so that it's got to be narrowed down. They've just thrown a broad brush at it and then expect through public comment and stuff to narrow that down to something more reasonable.
So, John, to that point, because Squaw Ridge is also the pretty much the boundary between wilderness area and non.
Yes.
And we had an experience here that I got involved in locally because when Pardee or East Bay Mud was wanting to raise Pardee Reservoir, they entered into a safe harbor agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to basically say, we recognize that our project may have incidental takings of some of these endangered species. So to offset or mitigate against those incidental takings, we want to designate certain areas as a safe harbor area for these endangered species. It occurred to me that why can't we lobby for that with the Forest Service, the Fish and Wildlife, all these different entities that are always finding ways to close down public access, whether it be motorcycle routes or whatever, to public lands, by requesting that they identify all wilderness areas as a safe harbor habitat. Plant all the yellow-legged frogs and everything else you want in the wilderness areas so that it allows for the unforeseen and incidental takings of these species on non-wilderness area lands. The land's already identified and protected under wilderness provisions. I know it's a big plan, but it certainly seems viable in the way they've used that safe harbor agreement in the past. Identify an area where you're going to protect these species to see to it that you've mitigated for the occasional incidental take in the areas where you don't.
Absolutely, and it's something that a county could look at doing, and I would encourage that. I've been an advocate of safe harbor agreements for that reason as well. Now, they're very complex and all those kind of things. You have to identify which species is included in that safe harbor area. For example, some of the red-legged frogs are lower elevation. Well, so the wilderness wouldn't satisfy, a safe harbor wilderness area wouldn't satisfy for a red-legged frog or some other species. But for this species and a bunch of other species, it would. And, in fact, that is one of the other justifications that we ought to look at closely here. A reason to list or not to list is, are there adequate protections already? Well, this particular species lives predominantly in the wilderness areas. Now, I don't know, you know, I haven't made that measurement all up and down its range, but the service admits that, yes, an awful lot of its range is in wilderness, and therefore it's already protected pretty much, except Fish and Game can come in, Fish and Wildlife, California's Fish and Wildlife Service, their new name, can come in and plant. And therefore, the wilderness doesn't provide all the protection that they would like to see. But once Fish and Wildlife Service says we are not planting in those areas, it does provide the protection. So wilderness is a strong reason, perhaps, to say we don't need it listed. There is no advantage to listing. It's already regulatory controlled.
John, can they change that protection from year to year?
The Fish and Wildlife Service?
Yeah.
The state, you're talking about for replanting. You know, they'd have to go through the EIS and all those kind of things again, which, you know, is not an easy process. So they could, yes.
I'm just saying in a couple of years, if they decide to change their mind and do some other species, then not sure if what Supervisor Plaz suggested will work, because it doesn't meet the goals of the environmental community to take more ground out of production.
No, well, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Let them argue it on the merits and not on.
That's right. Yeah, but it does take quite a bit of effort, but I am in favor of at least looking into it and seeing how the advantages of that would work for the county.
No, we're going to take public comment, but we have a 60-day comment period closing on June 24th, so we have time to do some research on this.
Yes, but you have only 45 days to request a public comment. So I would encourage you to get the public comment request in, and then, yes, we can do a letter later as we gain. In fact, I would recommend you do the letter after the public comment, because you might learn some more things there.
Public comment, public hearing?
Public hearing. I'm sorry, public hearing. Yes, I would encourage the public hearing request in right away.
What can you make submit comments after the public comment period?
No, I'm sorry. No, after June 24th, then you're not. So your comments have to be in before June 24th, but your request for public hearing has to be done within the first 45 days, which I think is June 10th or something like that.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. And the rest of the board feels about it.
No, I think it's a good thought, and then maybe we should invite them to have it here.
Yes. Yeah.
Offer our facility.
Why don't we take public comment right now, and then we'll come back and just define, as we discuss, our strategy. Public comment, gentlemen? You can sign in for the record, please.
Mark Bennett, thank you for letting me speak. About a year ago, I went to the Forest Service website to see what they're doing in our area and read about 10 projects in the El Dorado National Forest. One was the Indian Creek Restoration Project, which involved, quote, 3/4 of a mile of a tributary stream of Indian Creek using a series of plug and ponds to enhance habitat for yellow-legged frogs, Yosemite toad, and willow flycatcher, end of quote, and other species. Notice the word enhance. Many within the Forest Service and in the proposal's public comments stated that the project was unnecessary. Sometime later, I went back to that Forest Service website and could not find those comments. Perhaps they were taken off because they, I'm sure, edit periodically, or perhaps it's my computer skills. But none of that matters because it's public record and all that. Those comments, I'm sure, are available to the county. I learned that plug means bringing in boulders from the Silver Lake area. Since many within the Forest Service want to ban vehicles by closing roads, I wondered what equipment was used.
Their unpermitted quarry at Tragedy Springs.
Pardon?
From their unpermitted quarry at Tragedy Springs.
Right. Okay. You obviously know the turf far better than I do. At one of their recent public meetings, the Forest Service public meetings that was in this room, I asked one of the rangers. And I was told, yes, they were using diesel trailer trucks and similar equipment, probably running over a lot of frogs. While the Forest Service gave details about these projects on their website, and this was, again, a year ago, one thing that was conspicuously absent was the cost. No dollar figures were given. So I emailed the Forest Service. They responded promptly and courteously that the Indian Valley Restoration Project is, quote, estimated at about $200,000, unquote. I would like to be able to make the simple statement that this is a waste of taxpayer dollars, but I cannot do this since this isn't taxpayers' dollars. This is money borrowed, probably from the Chinese, or just printed by the Federal Reserve, which sooner or later will cause inflation and hurt lower-income people more so than others. Also, over the past year, I have been a member of the ACTC's Pine Grove Stakeholders Group. During this time, two critical yellow-legged frog habitats suddenly appeared in Pine Grove. I don't believe that the yellow-legged frog and these other animals are endangered or even threatened. I don't confuse an excuse with a reason. I do believe that these species are a subsidized political constituency that are part of a larger picture of kicking people and economic activity out of rural areas. Discussions in this chamber about homeowners insurance, gray wolves, mountain lions, town centers and the general plan, and countless other topics are part of this same larger picture. I ask that you move forward with this letter of opposition to designating about 1.8 million acres of critical habitat for the yellow-legged frog and these others, so-called endangered or threatened species. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Norman, Terry Nielsen from Pine Grove.
Afternoon.
I'm here basically for fact-finding because I'd like to make comments myself on this, and I like the direction you're going. But I'd like to know, they also credit pollution and climate change is one of the things that are destroying the frog. Is anybody going to address that? I mean, I hear the snow is unedible to digest because of all the pollutants in it. These would be the first species to be affected by this. How is this Indian Creek? Is it being successful in bringing up yellow frogs? These are the things I want to know, because if just putting the land aside isn't going to change the fact that maybe pollution's killing, maybe geoengineering, maybe who knows what's happening. But putting the land off is not going to help if something else is occurring. So I kind of, is there a yellow frog problem up there? Are they being successful in growing them up in that area? Do anybody know? John might know more. I mean, are they really endangered?
Harry, I found out we had a sensitive plant on Squaw Ridge that nobody else knew about until they looked for it. Then when they looked for it, they found it.
I'm just wondering if they're being successful at the Indian Creek establishment. I mean, if they put frogs there and they die right away, it's not the environment. So I want to kind of do some research on it, and I just kind of want to hear what you guys is, how are you guys going to go about it?
Well, I think if we are successful in getting the public hearing, those are questions you can ask.
Yes.
Okay. Fish and Wildlife folks when they're here.
Good. I'll be here.
Hey, Terry? Terry, one of my concerns is how that frog got up on Doak's Ridge.
Well, you know, if you want to stop a project, what do? You plant a frog.
Good afternoon.
Robert Allen, Sutter Creek. I would urge you guys to ask for a public hearing. I like the direction you're going into. It's obviously going to create us some hardship if we can't go to our lakes and fish that we've fished since before there were people here hardly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, John. I see two actions in. One would be for our board to request a public hearing of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the second would be to, after we get a reply, I guess, but prior to that, we can start formulating our comments for to meet that 6/24/2013 deadline.
Yes, settlement.
Gentlemen, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I need a motion to that effect on those two items.
I'll make a motion to that effect.
A second.
By Supervisor Onetto, second by Supervisor Novelli. And any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Yeah.
Item 13, Assembly Bill 52, discussion possible action relative to the subject legislation as it relates to the Native American Historic Resource Protection Act. Supervisor Onetto placed this on the agenda, not Supervisor Foster, as it states.
I was wondering who he was.
This bill would provide that no reimbursement is required by this act for specific reasons.
Okay.
That is unfunded mandate.
No, I asked to have this put on the agenda because basically I think what it would do would make it almost punitive on local agencies and on projects because it basically, it would mean that if there was any type of significant impact to a cultural resource of well, Native Americans, that they'd have to go through and do a significant and exhaustive, I guess you'd say, study of it and address it. And a lot of the stuff that Native Americans have, it's whatever it may be, it's not written down. And so, I mean, you can have stuff popping up all over the place where somebody says, well, you know, I wasn't prepared to speak this out. I came from the chairman. It said the chairman, so I'm not quite. So give me a little bit of slack on this. I thought it came from him, so he'd be carrying that. But so a lot of the stuff I have out there is they could say that's in. Oh, it's I'm trying to find the spot where I saw that. Okay, it could affect a tribal cultural resource, tribal reservation, or tribal rancheria, and. A second here.
Well, they're talking about sacred places, devastation of debilitated tribal region practices, cultural identity, and threaten the survival of California Native American. Page 3, top paragraph.
That yeah.
Well, assimilation policies.
Right.
Yeah, it's wide open. What's interesting, though, is would this apply to the siting of casinos, too? I have testimony here from one of our local tribal chairpersons described when somebody else was trying to do a casino on that area. It said, the land is the center of the Miwok universe. These are in quotes from her. It figures prominently in the Miwok's creation stories and has been used for religious ceremonies and other Indian rituals for thousands of years. Construction of a casino and with it a massive multi-story parking garage would cause irreparable harm to the land and the spiritual connection Ms. Pope and other Miwoks have for it. That was her testimony when somebody else was wanting to build a casino on that site, but now that she wants to build a casino on that site, it's no longer relevant, I guess.
I'd like to see how they're getting away with it's a state-mandated local program. And
no expense.
We're required to do it, but there's no expense because if you look at why, it says for a no reimbursement is required by this act for a specified reason, and the reason is because a local agency or school district has the authority to levy service charges, fees, or assessments sufficient to pay for the program. So that's how they're getting away with that now.
Yeah, they've done it. State Water Resources Board and all of them, yeah. They've got the.
So what do we want? A letter of opposition?
Yeah, Supervisor Arnetto, yes. Are you going to author the letter on this? That you brought it to the board?
Sure, I guess I can do that. but also, something else is talking about. Yes, I can. He was talking about where, you know, as defined in Subdivision K of Section 5020.1 or a tribal register of historic resources. And I just think this thing would be an open book to put in whatever they want, and I think they could stop all kinds of stuff, come in and say that's a, you know, under our tribal history, that's a sacred place. And and if it's not written down as far as what's a sacred place, who's to say where they are and where they're not?
I agree, Brian. I mean, the system we have in place right now is working through CEQA, and if you're going to do a project, you have to do an environmental analysis, and you have to look to the archaeological aspect of all this stuff. So a study is done before you go into a project, and they identify cultural resources or whatever and make note of it, and then that's done. If they have to mitigate it, they have to mitigate it. If they don't, they move on.
Yeah,
so the process is working, so I don't see why we need anything else.
Great. This changes that typical CEQA process. So if basically to approve a project, the tribe has to essentially sign off on the mitigation measure that's imposed. And typically with CEQA,
If after you've applied mitigation measures, there's still a significant, potentially significant impact, then the board can do that statement of overriding considerations, which looks at all these other factors. Well, if you get to that point under this legislation, those factors that you can override and approve it, even with potentially significant impacts, is a lot smaller. So it has to be an overriding environmental, public health, or safety. Which, in regular CEQA, there's economic and other factors that the board consider to override. So
they've limited the things that constitute a...
It's page 9.
Yeah, that's where I'm at
subsection
now.
Subsection D.
And there's something else here that was real. I'm glad you brought that up, Craig, since I was looking through there. Under item C, it looks like bullet point number 6, C1. In there, part of it goes on, any information including but not limited to the location, nature, and use of the place, feature, site, or object that is submitted by an affected tribe regarding a tribal cultural resource, including a sacred place, may not be included in the environmental impact report or otherwise disclosed by a lead agency or any other public agency to the public without the prior consent of the tribe that provided the information. Well, the question I have then, if that's the case, how can the public scrutinize the correctness of governmental actions that are taken if the information is not disclosed? I mean, I think it'd be real bad.
Any other board comments? Any public comment? Board action?
Make a motion to send a letter of opposition and then copy all our state legislators.
Governor, too?
CSAC, no, Governor, State and RCRC.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded to approve the board putting a letter of opposition together to this legislation, and I'm also going to forward that to our legislators in Sacramento.
Popcorn. John, it's popcorn.
Yeah.
Oh, it's burnt popcorn?
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Our minutes of, I have one set of minutes of April 9th.
I'll abstain since I wasn't here.
Move approval of the minutes of April 9th with minor corrections.
Second. Moved in second tonight.
Under discussion, do you have some major corrections?
Well, I had one that was not, I wouldn't call it minor. It was on page 4. Under the paragraph where Mr. Gedney, Caltrans District 10, there's a couple sentences on the bottom that just need to be clarified. However, policies and procedures to provide design immunity for any potential lawsuits or accidents that could occur in the future. So it just needs some massaging to make it into a complete sentence.
Yeah, I already did some. What I put there was, however, policies and procedures are designed to provide design immunity.
Right. I talked to Jennifer about that, and also two lines, three lines down. However, if that should be, is deemed impossible, then I had a couple other minor changes.
And right above that, I had another whole change on that, too. Right where we see, let's see, about the middle of that paragraph, in addition, Caltrans' investigation determined that although the proposed left turn lane would fit within state right-of-way, a mandatory design exception would be required because the left turn lane dislocation would put the travelway within the mandatory clear recovery zone of it should be of a highway?
That's recovery zone of the two PG&E power poles. That is correct.
No, well, it should be changed. What I put there, okay, here it is. Where it has parentheses, I put a left turn lane at this location would, and then right after would I added in, put the two PG&E poles
within
the mandatory clear recovery zone of the highway.
Okay. All right, any further items? With the changes...
I'll make a motion. Approve the minutes?
I think I already did.
We already had one.
Okay, well.
So it's been moved.
The maker of the motion agrees with those corrections.
Second also.
Yeah. Second agree? I wasn't worried about the maker of the motion. all those in favor?
Aye.
I could have had this meeting finished 2 hours ago.
Motion carries. You will respect the chair. All right. With that, we are complete with our regular meeting. The board, at least four of us, will go back into closed session for handle the remaining items regarding Indian gaming.
Hope you boys enjoyed the show.